guess to be politically correct, we include all these names. I obviously didn't have room to put the affiliation of all these people, but these were all of my co-authors were running traps in their respective areas during 2007. Many of them have run traps for many years and have more experience with this than I do. The reason for this project, as most of you I'm sure know, we're controlling our tobacco budworms very well with the Bolgard and the other BT transgenic crops, but the bollworm has more escapes, and when we do have worm pressure, we typically go in with pyrethroids, as they are the most economical of the alternative of the foliars available. So we need to make sure that we still are having efficacy with these pyrethroids to make sure we're not wasting applications and getting losses. So we want to detect if there are any changes in susceptibility over time. Another aspect of this project, the larger project that this is pulled out of, is to look at, hopefully, to look at movement in a rather indirect way. We are also working with the sweet corn growing states in the north and looking at bollworms in there, but I won't be touching on that data today. One part that Ryan Jackson is heavily working on with USDA is looking at determining the larval host of the moths that we are collecting and trying to see if there's a correlation between resistance and where that moth has come from. We didn't invent this. Tim Dennehy went through the adult vial test, which it's a different insect, but the methods are identical to the what he described in his lab. Roger Leonard, who spoke first this morning, and the Petri Antonio lab, which somebody's speaking from that lab after me, have been doing monitoring very consistently for many years, and I'm not going to touch on their data. IRAC and Cotton Incorporated were monitoring pyrethroids across the belt for 4 or 5 years there in the late 90s, and I'll share some of their data. USDA started looking at it more in the mid-Atlantic states as there was concerns with sweet corn growers. Of course, the corn earworm being the same pest as we're talking about. And then there was sort of a period of lesser activity. Monsanto was funding a few little projects here and there. I think Georgia has been doing some, but the last few years there really hasn't been much. The project that I'm talking about today has been jointly sponsored by Cotton Incorporated and USDA. So we're trying to get, we have the historical data, and we're trying to keep it going. So as I said, we did the adult vial test. We were trapping in pheromone traps, so we were trapping males, and that's what we've been testing. We used the 20 milliliter scintillation vials, glass vials. They were rolled on the hot dog rollers with 5 or 10 micrograms of cypermethrin. Recorded data after 24 hours, and mortality is determined if they're not able to fly. The larval host determination, which is a new twist on this, and this was done by Ryan, and he's more familiar with his methods than I am, but we asked all of our cooperators after their assay was done is to keep the moths, so we had to see if they would fly inside some kind of enclosure. Some people did it in their truck. Some people, I did it in a little sleeve cage that I could capture them again, and I'm sure some escaped. But as best we were able, we collected those that were both susceptible and resistant to the pyrethroid, put them in a freezer, and now Ryan has been busily running moths through an instrument that looks at the ratio of carbon isotopes in that moth. If the larva grew up on a grass, which is a C4 kind of plant, it has one kind of carbon signature. If it was on a broadleaf, such as cotton or any of the other broadleaves, it would have a different signature. So you can determine whether it was whether the larva grew up on a broadleaf or a grass by that method. Those that we find are coming from broadleaves, we will then further test with the for gossypol to say if it came from cotton or not, or from some other broadleaf. But we haven't gotten to that stage yet. Before I share this year's data, I'm going to set it up with a little historical data. This is from a publication by Martin et al. That was in the Beltwide Proceedings in 1999. It's 1998 data, percent survival across the states that were monitored there. You can see the very highest on the 5 micrograms was 12%, 10% in Louisiana and North Carolina. Everybody else is lower yet. Virtually no survival at the 10 micrograms per vial. Very, very susceptible populations at that point in time. They continued to do this program over the years, and we had a trend of increasing survival at the 10%. As I already showed the 98 data, there was no sites where you had 10% or more survival at the 10 micrograms rate. In 99, they actually did find three sites, 2005, 2006, and these were spread across several states. You can see Louisiana was in, had a site in each of those 3 years, South Carolina likewise. The other states were a little more sporadic. So you can see a trend, we're seeing a little bit more survival over time. I've plotted that same data here, and you'll see this, a similar slide later with the current data, but you can see we're tend to be, I mean, it moves around. Some are increasing over the years. A lot of them tend to decrease over the course of the season for some reason. But you can see everything is pretty much 10% and less, just a few sporadic population points which were greater than 10%. Oh, and that was, you know, belt-wide. Here's what our data is in 2007 at 5 micrograms. You can see my scale has changed quite dramatically. In the previous slide, my top of my graph is at 25% survival, and this is 5 microgram data. Now I go up all the way up to 80% survival. So our scale has radically changed, where in 98 only a few sporadic populations were above 10% survival. You can see that the bulk of our populations are now above 10% survival. Mississippi and Virginia would be the only states that seem to stay consistently below 10%. And you can see that 40 and 50% survival is not extremely uncommon. So it appears we have a trend here. Here I've we had 6 states where we had data from both of those years. Other states we only had for one of those years. So the dotted lines are the 98 data, the solid lines are the 2007 data, and the colors are the same. The colors are the same for the same state in the two times. So you can see that very consistently every state has elevated survival over that 9-year period. Other thing you can see, and I don't know what to interpret out of this, is we tend to have more survival in July than other parts of the year. It seems to be sort of a dome-shaped kind of curve, and I have no idea how to interpret that, but keep that in mind because you'll see that same shape at a later point. Same thing with the 10 microgram data. Very low survival again from 98. You can see everything is 5% and less. In 2007, we didn't test as many states at this rate, but you can see Louisiana and Georgia both are up there at 10%+ survival. Mississippi and South Carolina not as high. The states that we had in common, 4 states in common, again, you can see other than South Carolina, all the states are much higher currently than they were 9 years ago. Remember the dome shape that we saw with the resistance? This is the results of Ryan Jackson of doing the larval host determination based on the carbon isotopes. We were our purpose in this was to see if our resistant moths were coming from a place different from our susceptible moths. One of the things you can see in July is virtually all of our moths are coming from grasses, probably corn, primarily. Sorghum would also be a possible source. At other points before and after that, you're getting more broadleaf contribution. So July is when we're having the most resistance, and that's when they're all coming from grasses. But this shows both susceptibles and resistance are coming from there. If you look at August, in 2006, we see a pretty drastic difference between the susceptible and the resistance. The susceptible being that pink line, and the resistant, I'm sorry, susceptible being the blue line, the resistant being the pink line. We had more of the susceptibles coming from corn than we had the resistant ones. However, in 2007, that trend was not there whatsoever. Now, this data was pulled only from the Ryan Jackson traps in the Mississippi Delta. So both of the years are pulled from the same traps. We have the moths to run all the other areas, but he simply hasn't gotten that done yet. So this is a project that's ongoing, and so you'll probably be seeing more of this over the coming years. I'd like to thank USDA and Cotton Inc., Greg Payne at West Georgia, and my technician, Kathy Knighton, did a lot of the vial preparations, although a few states made their own vials. With that, I'll take any questions. Yes, Roger.
That implies that we assume that those models are coming in July, coming from field pain, and they all in the sound that we are treating field pain excessively with our region.
Which isn't true. In Mississippi, which is where these traps were, there's very little field corn treated.
What about sorghum?
We don't grow much sorghum.
Do you think there's a possibility that this is selection of occurring in the adult state rather than the larval stage? If so, the metal field corn is slain over the adult state. Because there's so much field corn in the environment, those moths are moving around, selection could actually be occurring before they get to the trap, but after they've got the host.
It's a possibility. I'm just trying to think timing-wise. These were caught in July. We're not doing a lot of LEP spraying in July yet. That's more happening in August. So it wouldn't be my intuitive guess, but it's a possibility. I can't explain the data. I'm just presenting it right now. I can't explain it. Well, we're hoping through this project, once we get the data, we can start to build those trends of where our moths are coming from and going to. I don't know where Mississippi moths are coming from, which is where that data was from. Louisiana tends to have more resistance than Mississippi, so I tend to think they're not coming from the west. But I simply can't say for sure.
We have to leave it there.
Okay.
So we can have the next presenter. Thank you.
Thank you.